This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the penultimate episode this time around of the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. As the final three games of the season, the playoff finals loom at Wembley Stadium. We'll preview them in the company of a man who's won the biggest prize of them all, with a place in the Premier League, the prize on the official EFL podcast. He started his career winning promotion to the Championship with Luton Town. After spells with West Bromwich Albion, Aston Villa, Leicester City and Birmingham City, he won the Championship playoff final with Hull City at 38. Curtis Davis has just said his emotional goodbyes at Derby County, where I think it's fair to say, mate, you had an eventful 6 years.
Yeah, to say the least. I think it's to sign for a club that were, I guess, on the up, potentially looking to get into the Premier League. They'd had a failed Premier League push in 2014 where they lost in the playoff final to QPR. They'd come close a couple of times to the playoffs. So I was going to a club that was fingers crossed on the up, and the signings we were making and stuff like that, it was quite promising. But 6 years later, we find ourselves in League One and just outside the playoffs. So it does show the roller coaster of the club. Obviously, that doesn't tell the whole story, but it has been an eventful 6 years. But 6 years that I can say I've loved and loved every part of it.
I was just thinking that in the main on here, we're going to preview the EFL playoff finals, and obviously two clubs that, well, frankly, were 5 years ago in the bottom division are suddenly like one of them's going to be in the Premier League. But I suppose for teams to go up, some have to come down and things. I guess the question is, unless something's happened that I don't know about, you're unattached at the moment.
Yeah, I'm unattached. I'm
a free agent. How do you feel about that, mate?
I'm all right about it, to be honest. I think it's really strange. I think it's almost like there's an... like I say, put the elephants off my back and the monkeys off my back, sorry. And it's kind of like the elephant. Be a heavy elephant. No, but it's like the monkeys off my back and I'm able to just relax, enjoy my summer and go with it. I think there was no wrong answer when I went in for the chat with the manager. I think it was clear to see I wanted to play more this year. I know I had my couple of injuries, but I wanted to play more this year. And I was potentially looking at other things anyway. But when you have the chat with the manager, considering I'd played the last few games, you don't know if he's maybe going to say, I want you to stay, I want you to kind of be part of the squad. Or, you know, but I'm happy that he's actually said, like, I think I need to build the team in my own direction, which is totally fine with me. And I'm able to now start looking for options and have my eyes wide open again. I'm quite excited to have a new project at 38.
I was wondering whether there were any parallels to when you were trying to find a club right at the start, because you kind of got in touch with just about anybody within your geographical sphere, and a couple offered you contracts or offered you trials at least. Yeah. And then obviously Luton came off. There's no similarity in terms of your standing in the world, experience, financial position, et cetera, but you're back to a clean sheet of paper again, Curtis.
There isn't. And literally, I've pretty much done this. Other than writing a football CV this time, I don't think I need to do that. I think I'll get away with that one. But in terms of geographically, yeah, I've literally kind of mapped out what's within a travelling distance by my standards around Birmingham. And, you know, you start whittling down pros and cons and possibilities, and then you have a list. So at the moment, I'm going through that process of making sure, rather than just having a club that's close, having a club that actually potentially has a project, potentially has something that's going in the right direction and you can be excited about, rather than just turning up to the next gig because it's nearby. So I think, yeah, over the next few weeks, I'll start whittling down that list and see where we land. But as I said, I think at my age, having played where I've played and stuff like that, I am relaxed about it. I'm excited by a new challenge, yes. but I'm not ready to just jump at something for the sake of it. So yeah, we'll take a bit of time and hopefully it comes up nicely.
I don't know if you saw the quote from Paul Warne, your manager at Derby County, but he said, "I will stay in touch with him for the rest of my life," which is beyond heartwarming, isn't it? It transcends your qualities on the pitch or even around the club. I mean, that just felt like I'm assuming you reciprocate, the two of you hit it off.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's what you're saying about me, it says a lot about him as a man, you know, because we're ships in the night footballers. We are players, but he treats you as people. And that's what I'll say is his biggest quality is he always looks at you as a person. So when I'm going into the manager and saying, you know, I want to play and I'll why not in the team, blah, blah, blah. I want to go in there and have an argument with him. You know, that's kind of, you want to go in there and be angry and have a reason to not like him. But after the first 5 minutes, we've had the chat where we're talking about why aren't I playing, why aren't I in the team? We're sat there for 15, 20 minutes talking rubbish about the weather, about what's happened, about what we did the weekend, and you come out smiling after having a chat with him. So, yeah, him and his staff are great, great people, and I do wish them all the best as Derby County employees, but also as the really good people that they are.
Do you know what, Curtis? I don't know what emphasis to put on this question, because on the one hand, I think about all the club went through in particular last season and then the change of manager early doors, laying of a base. I'm talking about missing out on the playoffs. So on the one hand, after everything that's got on, does the club need a stepping stone? It doesn't want to be in the third tier another season, but progress has clearly been made. I do have to ask you, you'd won six in a row, seven out of 8 were unbeaten in 15, and then you won 6 of the last 18, which kind of makes me wonder what happened.
So in terms of going back to the context of things, I think outside looking in, people will be just happy. I don't know if everyone will be, but a lot of people just happy that Derby County had a football club, the club still existed, the club was able to function first and foremost. From the inside, we believe we failed, because the squad that we put together, obviously is put together by one manager and then taken over by a different one. But we believe the squad we assembled had more than enough in terms of ability, in terms of experience, in terms of quality throughout to get over the line. And we didn't do that. I think when you go back to those stats about winning run we had and stuff like that, I personally think the turning point, in my opinion, I think where a mental block kind of happened was the Plymouth game. So the Plymouth away on the Tuesday night, the rearranged game. So we went to Plymouth where we could have gone 5 points behind them with them being top. So you're looking at it that you go 5 points behind them. I think we would have gone above Ipswich, just behind Sheffield Wednesday. And you're looking at it that we've got a chance here. We've got a chance at the top two. We're 1-0 up in that game. They come back, end up winning 2-1, controversial penalty. It's then the other way. We're 11 points behind them. We're now looking at it that probably going to be a bit hard to catch the top two. And then all of a sudden, because of the next couple of results we have, we then start looking below us and making sure we're trying to stay in the top six. So I think it was a big mental shift of chasing down the pack to almost trying to maintain your place. And I think because of the anxiousness to try and get those wins and try and get over the line in every game, we maybe left ourselves short and then maybe conceded goals we shouldn't have conceded because we're chasing a win rather than thinking this might be a good point and stuff like that. So, it's a shame the way it worked out in the end. But ultimately, we should have been better all throughout the season.
It's a fascinating one, isn't it? It's something I've thought of a lot and talked to a lot of people about, that notion of hunting v being hunted in football. It's a completely different, is it a completely different mindset? I'm not sure I've ever got a definitive answer out of anybody about it.
I think it is. I think when you're hunting, you're technically the underdog because you're not in the position. So if you look at the likes of, I don't know, I know they they end up turning losing to Luton, but Sunderland, who stepped into the playoffs with a bit of momentum, they go and win that first game, and you never know what's going to happen because they hadn't been there not since, you know, the likes of Sims left and the injury to Stewart in January. They hadn't really been there, but they went on this amazing run and got themselves in there. So sometimes when you're the underdog, you almost have the nothing to lose tag. Whereas Luton that day, because they'd finished third and had been there or thereabouts most of the season, there was a lot of pressure on them, which they did come through. But it is a different mindset of, like I say, staying in your position or chasing down a position. And I think I'd sooner be the one in the position first and foremost. I know it's a cliche after what I've just said, but I'd sooner be the one in the position because ultimately you've done something good to make sure you were there in the first place. But we had that this season and unfortunately it didn't work for us.
I think there was a line in Billions, you know, the Damian Lewis series. I think the line is along the lines of there's nothing more dangerous than a man with all the resources in the world than a man who's got nothing to lose. You know, the shackles come off when there's nothing, you can just go for it with freedom, can't you? Maybe that's what happened. I mean, Sunderland's form you refer to had won one in their previous nine and then suddenly won four of their last six. Maybe they almost thought it's gone. So what the hell, we can chill here. And then something happens.
Yeah, there's definitely a level to it. It's, people say you're on the beach. I think sometimes it works both ways. So you can have the idea that you're on the beach and just relaxing and don't want to get injured. Whereas some players play with more freedom. And the way that Sunderland play with their front five, which haven't really got a natural striker. Obviously, I know Gelhardt plays up front. But they play with that front five where it's so fluid and they can all play everywhere within it. It's a dangerous proposition if you're a team that, I guess, haven't got something to play for as well. And if they're expressing themselves and playing this lovely football, and if you're like, oh, just give it a rest sometimes. But I think that's what they got joy from. And like I say, when they play that way and they wear you down, they manage to find a way to get those results at the end. But unfortunately for them, Luton in that second leg did a job. I think the first game, they were a little bit nicer to Sunderland. The pitch was a bit bigger and they did get in their faces as much, whereas second leg, Rob did a job to be physical and to get the most of that physical battle, which they dominated the whole game.
Bearing in mind how close you got in the playoffs, have you been able to watch with any comfort?
The other divisions, yes.
Okay.
I haven't. I literally turned on the Peterborough Sheffield Wednesday game.
Wow.
The other day, because I flicked through social media and seen that Sheffield Wednesday had come back.
Yeah.
Didn't know what was happening. I had no idea. You know, when, with all due respect, when they lose the first leg, I saw a lot of the players after the game talking about people wrote us off. With all due respect, losing 4-0 in a game and thinking you need to play this same team 3 days later and then beat them by four again.
Yeah,
it wasn't a Sheffield Wednesday thing. It wasn't a Peterborough thing. It was a case of, this is a 4-0 result where you've lost 4-0 today and you're going to play the same team and you expect the result to change. For them, it did. So fair play to them. They showed all the character. The crowd behind them at Hillsborough was fantastic. The atmosphere. But again, is it a little bit of naivety from Peterborough? When we talk about chasing or holding on to something, I think if it's 1 or 2-0, it's a difficult scoreline. But a 4-0 and you're unable to see it out, it's a lot to take.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's do this chronologically. We'll skip back to the Championship, although we do need to pay credit as well to Darren Moore in that particular scenario because he came in the day after the 4-0 whacking and looked at all the times they'd scored 3 goals at least at home over the season and then was able to make a statistical case for this is possible and change the mindset of the players. But, before I do the Championship, I just want to say penalties, what's the most high-profile most at stake penalty shootout you've ever been involved with? Because obviously, Sheffield did go through on penalties ultimately against Peterborough in League One and Stockport against Salford in League Two.
The highest profile penalty shootout.
The one with the most at stake, not involved in it.
FA Youth Cup was probably my biggest one against Middlesbrough in the fifth round. But no, I think I've had maybe a couple of fourth or fifth round penalty shootouts in the League Cup and stuff like that, but never one where it's a playoff final or playoff semi-final or FA Cup or something like that. I haven't had that experience. So
imagine the pressure though, Curtis, can you? I mean, when you are the culmination of an entire season rests on you planting the ball in the back of the net from that kind of distance. Have you ever chatted to players that have been involved in them or maybe taken a crucial one in a game? Does anything come to mind, or missed one in a massive game like that?
I think it's, so if we go to Smith, he took a penalty earlier in the game. I'd like to have known his mindset, because he went the same way on this second penalty. So fair play, that's a lot of guts, because it's that cat and mouse side of it. Because the goalkeeper, I'd love to be a goalkeeper in one of those situations, because you can only be the hero. Unless you literally let one through your legs or something like that, you can only be the hero because you're only going to make a save. You know, Dawson from Sheffield Wednesday was the hero. He didn't make a save, but they hit the bar. You know, so he can claim I made him miss. But I think when you're a player, and like I say, you've taken a penalty earlier in the game, you're the first penalty up, and your mindset is, his head must have gone 100 miles an hour. Or it might have been the other way, that he knew, I'm going there, whatever happens. If he saves it, he saves it. And if you've got that mindset, it's a strong thing to have. But all I ever got told, and even the good penalty takers that I speak to, they say that I get up there, I pick my spot, and I finish it. Because they trust their technique. Whereas the likes of myself that would usually be further down the order, I will have an idea of where I want to go. But you maybe see the keepers saved two go in that direction, or saved one go in that direction. And you start scrambling your mindset.
Oh, yeah.
Which it does. And that naturally, I've done one before where, sorry, the last one I took was against Accrington in a second round of a Carabao Cup or something like that. And the keeper let in, I was going to go right, but the keeper let in the first four penalties on his right, so my left. So I thought, I'm going to go left. So I hit it hard left and high, and he didn't save it.
At what point? As you're walking up?
No. Just
when you're
just
actually on the spot.
So no. So when I'm in the lineup on the halfway line, I was thinking about where I want to go and what I feel comfortable with. But then I changed my mind after seeing the penalties that he missed, that he didn't save. Sorry, and I felt that he wasn't that good to his right hand side. So I went across and scored, luckily. But I didn't make the decision literally on the spot.
No, but I think probably ones that do get missed are those that have that precarious uncertainty when they are almost about to take it and a shilly-shallying in their mind. And like,
but this is where the
last minute, you know?
The Ivan Tonys and the ones that have those bold penalty walk-ups, they're the ones that benefit from that, because they watch the keeper. And it takes a really strong keeper, like Jorginho used to do, and Pickford in the Euros stood up and waited.
Jorginho
didn't know what to do and he missed it. So if you're a keeper that's able to, with an Ivan Tony, stand until the very last second and be bold, then it's on the player. Whereas if you move, they're that good that they're watching you the whole way. They just, like Tony, the amount of times he's passed it a yard away from the keeper, but the keeper's gone the other way. Nathan Lennington used to do the same thing years ago. I don't think people talk about him enough, but he was brilliant at that. He used to just trot up to the ball, watch the keeper, and literally just roll it a yard from them. It's a fantastic technique, but it's always a technique that if you've missed it, you look cocky.
I think I'd just absolutely thunder it with all my might, wouldn't I? I think that would be my strategy. Just put
straight
everything
down the middle.
You've got in. Well, I don't know about down the middle. I might try and put it somewhere. But I know this. I wouldn't be placing it. I wouldn't be like placing it with beautiful dexterity. I'd just be trying to swing my leg back and just hit it as hard as possible. So that, we're obviously talking about a completely fabricated situation. So, Championship playoff final. I mean, there was a fascinating graphic. I think I was following Mark Sampson, the former Stevenage England women's manager, and he tweeted this. He put up the 2017-18 2015-16, so that's 5 years ago, League Two table, and he just said either the team who finished second that year or the team who finished sixth are going to be playing in the Premier League next year. I mean, these are extraordinary stories, even in an extraordinary season.
It is, because, you know, often in football, we talk about, you know, so for instance, in League One, we're talking about the big clubs. So we were talking about the fact that Sheffield Wednesday are there, Ipswich, Derby County, Bolton Wanderers, Barnsley, teams that had been in the Premier League, at Portsmouth, you know. But ultimately, we've got a history of at least being in the Championship as such. Whereas when you come to Coventry, that are known as a big team because they'd been in the Premier League in the late 90s, you know, they are a big club in terms of the stature they had. But this club's nearly gone out of business, I think, two or three times over the last few years. They've had to sell the stadium. They've had to play at Birmingham. They've had to play at Northampton. They've gone all the way down to League Two. So the job that they've done is nothing short of amazing as well. And it you know, I think Robbins needs to take a lot of credit for that, because he's guided him through that journey. And it's been fantastic from him, because he's kept a core of the group and he's added a little bits of quality, because financially they can't afford to go out and get this one and that one. But they've added little bits of quality as they go and unearthed some gems as they've gone along the way. And then you come back to Luton Town. Luton Town's the other way that no one would ever expected them. And a lot of, I think if you said to a lot of fans a few years ago, you'll be in the Championship, they probably would have settled for that in terms of being a steady Championship side and eventually maybe have a push. But to say that, you know, within the last, 12 years, they've gone from League One, down out of the league, back up, and now they're one game away from the Premier League. It's an unbelievable thing. You know, you go to the stadium. Everyone always talks about the stadium when it comes to the Premier League. It is somewhere that if you had to play there, and I think this goes for the Championship as well, because a lot of good Championship stadiums, you look around, you think, what is this? And it gives you an edge. And the fact that potentially in the Premier League, if they were to go up, they might have to change ground, or I believe it's something like 10 million they'll have to spend on it, if not. But it's an unbelievable place to go and play football, an unbelievable atmosphere, an old school ground, tight, fans are right on top of you. But for the story for the club, the administrations that they've been through, the players that they've lost, everything over the years, even this year, you know, they lost a couple of players that got sold in January and stuff like that. It's a fantastic story for Luton Town.
I've been lucky enough to follow the teams out at Cattleworth Road in days of National League, League Two. The noise, it's one of the longest tunnels, I think, in the game, isn't it? And it
with the slope,
with a slope down it. Mind your head for big fellas like you. Yeah. But the way in which the further you walk down it, you get closer to the crowd. But because it's plastic sides of a pull-out tunnel, the noise gets louder and louder. I can only imagine how intimidating that is for the opposition. A couple of bits I just want to tidy up for the benefit of younger listeners or viewers to this. Yeah, Coventry, 22 years ago, were relegated from the top flight after 31 seasons up there. So those of you that are of younger ages, you won't remember that. You'll just associate Coventry with struggle. And Luton Town, relegated from the EFL 15 years ago, 10 years ago, finished seventh in the National League and have only been back in the league for 9 years. So to that end, this is more than life-changing, because, you know, Luton Town have got this Power Court project to build a new stadium in the centre of the town. And Coventry as well need to end this uncertainty about where they're playing with Wasps' demise. They've done a deal to stay under the new owner, Mike Ashley, in the CBS arena for the next 5 years. But nevertheless, the ultimate plan has got to be going back to where they own their own bricks and mortar. So the financial riches will help whichever one of them gets up, Curtis, to achieve their or get closer to their long-term dreams.
That's exactly it. I think that's the big point to make, is you don't like to be negative, but if either one of them went up, and were to be relegated straight away, with the riches of the Premier League now, I think it's worth something like 125 million a year. And then even then, if you get relegated, you get still, I think you get 2 years of full payment, and then it whittles itself down. Yeah. So if we talk about Luton Town first, that I obviously know the structure of the club, you can build the academy. You can get the academy built up to academy status. Therefore, you're not losing teams, losing players to teams in and around you. You've not got teams just watching from the sideline and poaching your players when they're young. You know, that happens so much at that level, but people don't really see it because they're a cap-free club. They're not able to hold on to players if they're not at that level. So they could build the academy, start getting that hub of players in and around, you know, Bedfordshire / North London and trying to get those players in. That would be one thing. Getting the stadium is massive because if they get Power Court built, it'll be fast-tracked. The money will be spent on that. I know Gary Sweet will be very sensible with what they do in terms of investing in the squad if they are to go up. But the structure will be there that, God forbid, if they came back down, the structure's there where stadium is either started getting built or the plans are there and the money's there. Academy is on the verge of getting produced and everything's going to go into that, but the money's there. Now, we still have this pot that we can have another go at going back up, but it will still be sensible because I don't see Luton Town going up and, with all due respect, just using the comparison, but Nottingham Forest buying 20-odd players and then wiping the whole squad out. I think they'll buy a few, yes, definitely, because you have to buy quality and you have to buy quality in numbers to make sure you're able to sustain the squad, yes. But I don't see the club being the club that throw everything at it at all costs to try and stay there with the risk that they go down and they've got all these players on big money and they're having to try and pay them up. Going on to Coventry as well, like you say, we've spoken about the fact that they've played at more different grounds than they've played at their own in the last few years. You know, Birmingham City, St Andrews, obviously down in Northampton at Sixfields, it's not what the fans want. And if they're able to own their own bricks and mortar, as you said, it's such a strength that you have to build your club back up. You start getting fans back in the door because they know the money's all going to Coventry City, because I think that's been a big thing over the years. They've had small crowds because fans that didn't want to pay money into the old ownership. Now it's a case of, like I say, can they get there? And then the rest will take care of itself. Because again, it's a club that's had to cut the thread accordingly and make sure they're doing things right. And I don't believe if they did go up, and I don't think Robbins as a manager, if they did go up, would want to go gung-ho and then buy all these big names or people that want to jump on the bandwagon because they're Premier League. I think it'd be a sensible transition.
I can't help but feel, as much as their histories feel a little bit tied in terms of their progression from the bottom division of the EFL, as we discussed, there are two very separate, if you like, ethoses here or fundamentals. Luton seems to me to be the whole charisma of the club, carried by somebody like Gary Sweet, the chief executive, David Wilkinson, the chairman, the sense of injustice when they were relegated out of the EFL 15 years ago. And it doesn't matter who comes and goes, manager drops in, goes, Nathan Jones goes away, Mick Harford gets them promoted, maybe doesn't work out on the next one. The club ethos remains strong. Whereas it seems to me with Coventry, feels very much hewn around one man, Mark Robbins, who for me, one of the greatest feats of management was he straddled that line between unpopular owners, but staying on side with them, but never falling out with the fans. That was a very tricky challenge that he undertook there.
Oh, massively, because I think it would have been a job that if he'd walked away when his stock was reasonably high from getting him promoted, from doing well in the Championship, he could have walked away in all these situations. But I think he looked at his squad, he believed in his squad, he believed he could do something with this group. To say, you know, would they finish fifth and would they potentially be in the playoffs this year? Maybe, we don't know. Especially when you look at the start of the season, and it was a false league, because let's not forget, you know, people talk they were at the bottom of the season after seven games, but they'd only played like five, they'd only played two or something, or three or something like that. So they were a few games behind. So you knew they would come good. but it's still the catch-up mentality, as we're speaking about. To know that these teams have played those more games than you, you need to catch up 9 points before you're even off the bottom and stuff like that. It is a tough mentality, but they've strove through it. They've got some good players. They've got some of the old guard that have been there throughout and kind of got promotions with them. They've got the likes of the Gokeres that's come in from Brighton and potentially could have left. They could have, you know, lost him. I think it was Middlesbrough that was sniffing around him before. So the fact that they've been strong to hold on to players like that, it's been massive. And they could now potentially, like I say, Gyokeres could be playing Premier League football with Coventry rather than having to get that move to do so.
Got to commend the work rate of both teams as well. I thought they were both absolutely outstanding. There was a lovely moment, well, not from Sunderland's point of view, but in Luton, Sunderland, where Carlton Morris went on this dribble into the corner. There's only about 2 or 3 minutes left, and he fell to the floor about 3 times. Yeah. But somehow he still kept onto the ball. He trapped it between his knees. He smothered it with his ankles. He got back up. He fell over again. I mean, both teams just, you know, they just absolutely stifled the opposition. It was a joy to watch. Hard-working guys determined to get over the line.
That's exactly it. And I think that's the ethos of Luton. Whatever style of football is going out there, when you go on a tight pitch like Kenilworth Road and you've got a lead like that, and like I say, you've got a Carlton Morris, you've got an Adebayo, they're the players that you want to, you know, especially with all due respect against Sunderland centre-halves who are naturally full-backs. They've got to have a physical battle with those two. It's a long afternoon or evening. And then if they're doing it in the last minute when you're tired, they're tired, you're trying to get the ball back, you're getting frustrated. It was fantastic game management from them at the end. Obviously, I'd like Cody Drame to have squared the ball and Luton could have just won 3-1 instead, but he kind of got caught in between running into the corner and then half shot, half passed. And I don't know what he was thinking at the end, but the team ethic, the work ethic, the players on the floor that you see getting cramp all over the pitch, taking, which I don't think a lot of people like this, but yellows for the team and things like that to stop breakaways and stuff like that. It was it's fantastic performance. And I really think Rob Edwards is owed a lot of credit, because taking over a man's team, as we spoke about earlier, Nathan Jones, who's synonymous with Luton Town and the success that they've had, to then take over his team that were doing okay, come from the rivals across the road. You'd got a group of players that are used to this one manager, and then all of a sudden you've got a style of play that probably didn't suit the way you want to do things, but he adapted the style of play slightly but kept the fundamentals the same, kept most of the fundamentals the same, went with the group. And all of a sudden, we look at the end of the season now, he'd only lost 2 games and he's now, again, one game away from being in the Premier League. You know, he went to Watford probably thinking that was his fast track after Forest Green to get to the Premier League. Watford have ended up giving him a lifeline by sacking him and then letting him go to Luton Town because it's the best thing that could have happened to him.
I got to ask you what it is like, I'm talking in particular about the Sky Bet Championship final looming, to know a game of that magnitude is coming up. Let's be honest, for a heck of a lot of the players involved this coming weekend, it will be totally life-changing. For whichever team misses out, there is a fair chance that a good proportion of that team does not ever play in the Premier League. Is it in your head all week as you build up to that game? Can you not get it out? You're so close to the prize and yet you're so far away. How on earth do you get through the week, Curtis?
I think it's a case of, so if you live in the town where your team is, so if I go back to Hull City as an example, all of us players lived in Hull. So wherever you go, there's going to be Hull fans. And it would be, you'd go down the shop, oh, go get them at Wembley, come on, let's get back to the Premier League, or whether it's the FA Cup final, whatever, everyone is constantly reminding you of it. So it's almost like a big smile, yeah, mate, yeah, we'll try our best. So you can never really take it out of your mind because you understand the buzz around the community. But I think the difference is expectation necessarily isn't necessarily there that highly at those kind of clubs. So if we're looking at Coventry and Luton, as we said already, if we'd spoken about the beginning of the season, would they have been there? Probably not. And that's not to say when you're there, the prize is getting to Wembley. Wembley's not a prize, it's to promotion. But I just believe that when they're players that haven't played there, it maybe weighs on you a little bit more because you do think this could be our one chance at doing so. And if you do miss it, you do always wonder, will they come back again? But Luton showed last year they could come back again. And they're looking as if, you know, last couple of seasons, they're a playoff team. So what's to say that if they didn't manage it, they wouldn't be able to do it again? So it is a massive mindset thing. But I think ultimately, all the nerves and everything that go into the game, once you cross that white line, I think a lot of players are the same. It all just disappears. Hear the national anthem, disappears. You've got a game to win. And like I say, if it's about my family eating better next week or your family, I'm going to make sure mine eat better than your family this week.
I could ask you for your thoughts on how this game might go, but I think with your association, that would be very little point in that. It might be pretty obvious. Shall we talk Sky Bet League One? And there's been a huge focus on Wednesday after that comeback. But actually, I wonder whether Barnsley, bearing in mind that last season they finished 4 points behind your own team, despite the fact your own team had been deducted 21 points, have had a complete and total rebuild under Michael Duff. He's their seventh manager in 5 years, the first UK-born. He's got his own trajectory. They believed to be the only player to have played in each of the top eight tiers of English football. I mean, he looks like one to watch to me, Curtis. He really does look like one that could go all the way.
Yeah, he's done a fantastic job with that group. I don't know him personally, but I've played against him a few times and had a good chat with him when we played Barnsley earlier in the season. He did actually, in the FA Cup game when we played Barnsley, call myself and Richard Stearman Jurassic Park as we were coming onto the pitch. So that was quite nice to hear. But yeah, listen, I think that's the big thing. I think Michael Duff will be happy to go under the radar. I think he's happy doing the job that he's doing. He knows he's doing a good job with that group of players, with the squad that he's got. He's got a philosophy and a way that he wants to do things that he will rarely bend on, you know, which has worked for them. And he'll be confident. You know, they recently, I say recently, obviously a few weeks back, but beat Sheffield Wednesday to break their run of whatever it was, 21 unbeaten or whatever. So they'll believe they can do it again. And Sheffield Wednesday are always going to be spoken about as the big club. Obviously, Sheffield Wednesday, notoriously Premier League team, cup winners, league winners, whatever, over the history. But Barnsley have got something to go for as well, you know, for them to get back to the Championship be the first thing. But it is a team that's been in the Premier League as well. So it will be an interesting game. I think, as I said, with all the noise being about Sheffield Wednesday and everything that they've done to get there in the first place, Michael Duff would just be happy for his Barnsley team to just be developing in the background, getting around their training and without all the distractions. And come game day, you never know. But I think he'll be confident in his team.
You don't sound like you're convinced. I'm looking at their form, won 14 of their last 22. I think that's pretty astonishing.
No, I'm not acting like I'm not convinced. I'm neutral. You know, it Sheffield Wednesday have got players that have been there. Some of them were there when we were playing in the Championship playoff final. I say Barry Bannon was there at least anyway when we were playing in the Championship playoff final to go to the Premier League when I was at Hull City. So it's a team that is full of experience, full of players that have played at the higher level in terms of the Championship. A few have played in the Premier League. So it's a question of the qualities and what Barnsley can bring to the game in terms of their recent results and in terms of their form against the team that is maybe able to handle the big occasion more. So that's why I'm kind of balanced on the fact that I believe in Barnsley and I believe they're a very good team. They obviously turned us over at their place 4-1 recently. So that wasn't a great day for us, but a very good day for them. But, you know, when it comes to game day, there's also mindset against form that you need to consider.
And obviously, Sheffield have previous of with their more than impressive feat of what they did last week under ginormous pressure. I got to say, with Barnsley, when Michael Duff took that job, I thought it looked curious. I wondered how much more stretch there was in Barnsley. Obviously, they have been promoted to the second tier a couple of times in the last decade, but I did look at that and think, oh, that's a curious move. I think he's exceeded all expectations there. Do just have to talk about the abuse of both Darren Moore and the Sheffield Wednesday owner, Depondchansiri, in the aftermath of the first leg defeat. I mean, a proportion of football fans are morons, are they not?
Yes, unfortunately. I think team loses a game and all of a sudden you're this or that.
Yeah.
That's the shame about it. You know, when they went on that 21-game unbeaten run, I don't think anyone was saying that, because the way I stand is, if I am a black this or black that or whatever they want to call me, I'm it throughout 46 games of the season. Don't change your mind on when I get a win or a loss. If that's what your beliefs are, that's what your beliefs are. And it's just a shame that it takes a loss for somebody to try and use that as something that to try and get a rise out of someone. And I don't know if it's like they feel like it's something that they're proud of, like, oh, I told him, kind of thing. I just don't understand the mindset. It doesn't belong in society. I don't like talking about it in football, because it seems like football gets a highlight. It doesn't belong in football, of course not, but it doesn't belong in society. You know, you wouldn't be walking down the street or going to work and somebody's had a bad day at work and say, oh, you this and that, because they had a bad day at work or didn't make their sales quota. It doesn't happen. But the egg is on their face now, because Darren Moore, the support he got from his players, which is the most important thing more than anything, more than support from everyone else outside of it, support he got from his players, support he got from the group around him was massive. And by him staying calm and not taking anything personally, which I know Darren personally as well, myself, I played with him, he's a very calm and thoughtful man in terms of what he wants to do next and what words he wants to use. So when we speak about him going to the change room the day after the losing that game 4-0 and then coming up with the stats and things like that, that was very measured from him. And ultimately, we can say in hindsight now, it worked because they did get the result back. But I think the biggest thing for him was that he got the reaction from his team that he got, regardless of them winning or not.
So you're going Luton Town in the Championship. Who are you going in Sky Bet League One?
It's so tough.
I'm imitating a drum roller.
I feel Sheffield Wednesday off of the back of the craziness the other day. I found something to get them over the line. I think I really fancied Barnsley going into the playoffs, if I'm being totally honest. I fancied Barnsley as the team going into the playoffs. But having the result that they had the other day, it seems that that's going to galvanise them, you know, to have come back from that. They'll believe they're unstoppable and they'll be flying on cloud nine and we'll take that into the final.
Barnsley fans, I'd just like to say that that is the opinion of Curtis Davis, not the opinion of the official EFL podcast. Sky Bet League Two final, Carlisle United against Stockport County. I mean, some great stories in here. What I must make sure I flag here is I love this. So Paul Simpson is obviously the manager of Carlisle United. His son, Jake, is the fitness coach of Stockport. So a Lord only knows where Simo's Mrs. Jackie is going to be sitting at Wembley this coming weekend, or where Jake's two siblings and Paul's two other sons, Joe and Dominic, are going to be as well. Dominic, by the way, is the lead in Book of Mormon in the West End, in case you didn't know that story. It's amazing, these stories that throw up. I feel for Ben Barkley as well, who obviously helped Carlisle into the final, but he's on loan from Stockport and can't clearly play against his parent club. That's a little bit bittersweet for him, isn't it?
It's always bizarre, those ones where, I guess, teams at the start of the season or halfway through the season, when they're thinking about where they loan their players and stuff like that, and they loan him to a club, they'll literally finish a place next to them. Obviously, sometimes it's financial decisions, sometimes it's a case of, no, he's surplus to requirements, we won't hold him back. But it is a shame for him. It will be something where the team are going to have to adjust, because obviously they've lost a player. But it, going back to Paul Simpson and the family connection, you have to support dad. He's the manager. The fitness coach, yes, fair enough. I understand that. But I'm getting behind dad. Dad's going to help us out a bit further down the line. So if I'm his other son, I'm like, yeah, dad, go on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they could be at that age as well where they need a bit of parental help in various ways back to us. On a serious note, what a feat for Paul Simpson. We've had him on a few times since he retook the reins. I'll remind everybody, he won back-to-back promotions with Carlisle between 2004 and 2006. Brought him out of the National League, straight through League Two, into League One before he moved on to Preston North End. He won the Under-17s World Cup with England in 2017. He's had a health issue and having to have a kidney removed that had a cancerous growth on it. He's come back in. I mean, it's spectacular, his revival of his home city club.
Well, you know, we were talking about when he went into his hometown club to help him out, to save him from relegation. So regardless of his history by saying all those years ago he did that with Carlisle, just recent history, he saved the club. He went back, I say, to save his home club. He felt that he wanted to help them out. And then he's then gone from that to getting a team that were in and around the top three for a lot of the season as well, that potentially could have gone up straight up. They'll be frustrated that they didn't, but it's amazing, honestly. And I've listened to, or I've spoken to a few lads that have been there and stuff like that. So I didn't realise that they train in Manchester. So I don't know if that's been something that they've done for a long while, but I think it's a way that they're able to get more players there. Because if you're able to tap into that northwest hub of players and they can live locally to the training ground, it means that they're able to all be together, be around that, and then they don't have to up sticks and go to Carlisle, which is a bit out of the way on the Scottish coast.
Well, so you're telling me something new about that. I mean, I went up to see him this season, they were definitely changing training in Carlisle. I wasn't aware that did do that away day, but maybe they do it sometimes just to take the pressure off, and maybe they do it
I don't know, because this was so Jack Stretton, that is actually at Stockport now, he was at Carlisle. And he when I spoke to him, he said that they were training in Manchester, so it was a good thing for them that he was able, because what they did is they were training in Manchester and they would go up on the weekend, on the Friday, on and the stay Monday like day. An away game. They stay in the vicinity of the stadium like an away game. But either way, it's something that, like I say, clubs are thinking forward now, and the best way to attract players, because that's another thing that Paul Simpson would have had against him. When I was speaking about myself and talking about locality and stuff like that, with all due respect, Carlisle weren't going to be throwing around lots of money more so than any other club. So if you could go to Stockport, which is in Manchester, on X amount, or you can go to Carlisle, which on the same amount, it's definitely something that will draw you to Stockport more than Carlisle. But fair play to Paul Simpson for getting those players up there.
On the other hand, I always remember a story I read a few years ago about if Newcastle wanted to be world-class, attract world-class players, could they get them to go and live in Newcastle? And, you know, could we have a scenario where some of the far-flung Premier League clubs might end up having a training base in London and then only flying up for the... That's not a good thing. You've got to have the bond with a local community, surely, yeah. Curtis.
100%. Like I said, walking around the streets of Hull, you know, it would have been easy if we train in Leeds, but we just go to Hull for the games or something like that. No, you get a feel for the people, you get a feel for the community. And it's something that, like I say, when you go out there and you actually feel what it means to people, I think it does give you an extra edge. So, I think all those kind of things, being that far away, I think would be a big ask.
I wonder, as Dave Challoner, the Stockport County manager, across his time with Colwyn Bay, AFC Fylde, Hartlepool United, and Stockport, has won 6 promotions in 13 years. may well seal a seventh. Why hasn't he been linked with at least very senior championship clubs? Because that's an astonishing record, is it not?
It's a great record. I think maybe this would be the one that would seem linked. Because with all due respect, getting promoted out of the National League maybe will go full on deaf ears to a lot of owners and stuff like that. But having done the job with Stockport and potentially getting them up, it might be the one that would have him linked. But I think himself, he'd probably look to complete the project. I think it would take, you know, a big name as such club to potentially take him away, because I think a lot of managers, when they build something at a club, they do get promoted with it. They want to see the fruits of that. It's not that easy to kind of take a team up and then just be like, oh yeah, well, I'm done now. I'm going to move off to this place. Because the grass isn't always greener. So I think a few managers like to settle their team in, see where they can get to and try and push them to the next level. Because I know a manager's stock will be a lot higher if you're able to get back to back or at least go from promotion into a playoff push.
Mm. I'm not for one second suggesting that Dave Chandler should leave Stockport County. I'm not. And they're on an upward trajectory and are very, very ambitious. I get it. But I look at that and I don't think he's had the accolades that he should have had. It's been astonishing. And by the way, poor start to the season for Stockport. Only won 3 of their first 13, won 19 of the 33 remaining games. Luton Town, Sheffield Wednesday, and...
Only one reason I'm going to say it, but I'll go for Stockport because Jack Stretton. Young striker that was at Derby with myself. He scored in the semi-final. I'll go for Stockport because of Jack Stretton.
Thank you very much.
No bias at all.
No. Unlike in another division that we discussed. Yeah. How's the next few weeks look for you? You said you're pretty chilled, but you're obviously rummaging around, seeing who's being appointed where, seeing what opportunities might exist.
Yeah, obviously looking at who gets promoted, who does what, who, you know, looking at all these kind of things. Just relaxed in the gym every day as us footballers always do just before we go on holiday. So the 4 or 5 week push, I've been in the gym. But just want to enjoy a break, enjoy some downtime with the family, with my girls, and then be ready to go again. Just making sure I'm keeping on top of myself, staying reasonably fit, because at my age, you can't really come off of it too much because it's a lot harder to get going for that pre-season. So I'll be looking after myself, making sure I do the right things, and fingers crossed I can hopefully get something sorted in the next few weeks.
But it could roll on, couldn't it? Because let's say something didn't come up that's right for you. Mm-hmm. Out of contract players as well are always in demand, even once we've got through the first month of the season as well. So I guess you're going to have to stay on it, even on your holidays.
Yeah, 100%. I think if there were to be nothing that suited me, I'd hate to say I'd just jump at something because I don't think I would be, but I think I'd be willing to compromise. Because if we were to get to September and I didn't have a club, you'd have me on the sofa in the Sky Studios or somewhere instead, and I'd probably end up going that route. So I intend to try and get in somewhere, and I always feel it's important to get in somewhere for pre-season, to get to know everyone, get to know everyone's qualities and work with the people, both the managers and the players. But, you know, it does have to be right rather than jumping at the first opportunity. Plus, I'm suspended for game one. So,
Of course.
There's an extra week that I could have thinking, basically.
Well, listen, spread the word. Yeah, by not paying your win bonus for the first game of the season, you mean?
Yeah.
Spread the word, folks. Curtis Davis is on the market and looking for opportunities. Or if not, I have to say, anybody that's watching this or if you have been listening to this, go and seek out the pictures version on YouTube, because to say the man is colour coordinated with his homestead background, a vision in magnolia. Curtis, it's been a joy. And whatever the future holds, listen, I'm not going to congratulate you so far. That sounds as though we're signing you off into retirement. But mate, you just keep going. You're a credit and an inspiration. Great to talk to you.
Top man, Clem. Thank you.
They don't make them like that anymore. That is it for this episode. A big, big thank you to Curtis Davis. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Good luck to all the playoff finalists. We'll see you soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.